Hello, happy Thursday. I'm Molly McAllister.
And I'm Spencer Williams, and here is All Access Pass.
We're broadcasting from CITR 101.9 in Vancouver on the unceded territory of the Hukkaminam-speaking Musqueam people. So tonight's show, which is our fourth episode, includes an interview with Dr. Pat Miranda, who's a professor at UBC, where we'll be continuing the dialogue on the accessibility of post-secondary education for students with autism spectrum disorder. We began that conversation last week with Dr. Rashmi Nirmal, also from UBC. We'll also give a preview of an event that Spencer and I attended this Tuesday at Venue Nightclub, and we'll cover that more in depth next week on our next show. So we'll start off with a song.
Here is Broken Fences with Song for You.
Voices capture long road ahead, not looking for a meaning, breathing in my love's bed. Well, I don't want to scare you about feeling your soul. If lover's prayer scares you, oh, tell me I should go. Whispers on guitar strings strung, whispers of paths undone. How is it that you call me so completely when I'm at this wall built around me? Well, I don't want to scare you about feeling your soul. If love is prayer scares you, put my mind at ease, strip away fear of the past, praying that this music lasts. I don't want to scare you about feeling your soul. If lover's prayer scares you,
Santa?
Oh. Nothing like the salt air. Now, if you excuse me, I have a concert to attend.
On December 5th, Mint Records will be hosting this year's Ridiculously Early Xmas Party at the Astoria with performances by Rennie Wilson, Monomyth, Fake Tears, Energy Slime, Supermoon, Uptights, and a Faith Healer solo set. CITR Femme Concept DJs will be playing the hits all night long, and yes, there will be presents for the first 50 people. Visit mintrex.com for more details. Remember, it's this December 5th at the Astoria.
Let me refresh your memory. Russians. That's right. Russians. Ruskies. Communists.
Do you like Friends? Well, we like you. So become a member and get a Friends of CITR card. Not only does it make you special, but it gets you all kinds of deals with our friends at UBC and the West Side, like Australian Boot Company, Dentry's Pub, The Bike Kitchen, Limelight Video, and more. Visit CITR.ca for more, or come check us out in the Nest.
This week on the Arts Report, film, theater, dance, books, visual art, and more. Every Wednesday at 5 p.m., the Arts Reporters explore what's fun, fascinating, campy, or critical in the Vancouver art scene. You can find bonus content on our Mixcloud, Facebook, and Twitter. Got an idea for a review, interview, or original production? Email arts@citr.ca. Listen Wednesdays at 5 p.m. or anytime on citr.ca.
It could be global trance.
All right, time for another rock. Song. Here is Our Friend Say by Allie Milner and Beekeeper.
Love for shattered hearts. I will be there soon. I hold your hand, cautious hope. 'Cause when we split, it killed us both.
You're my
Welcome back to All Access Pass. Up next, I'm going to play an interview for you that I did yesterday with Dr. Pat Miranda, so I hope you enjoy. Today is Wednesday, November 25th, and I'm joined in the studio with Dr. Pat Miranda from UBC. She's a professor at UBC in the Department of Educational and Counseling Psychology and Special Education. And since 2009, she's been the director of the Center for Interdisciplinary Research and Collaboration in Autism at UBC. Thanks for joining me today, Dr. Miranda.
Thanks for having me.
Could you expand a little bit on the role that you currently have at UBC after that description that I gave?
Sure. Well, I teach courses, graduate courses mostly, in the Department of Educational and Counseling Psychology and Special Ed, and I supervise graduate students. I also am leading a large cross-Canada research study on autism, and as director of the CIRCA, I do things like sponsor colloquia, organize meetings between community groups and professionals, try to create liaison relationships across the various universities in the province, at a research level, a whole bunch of different things.
Yeah. Okay. So quite a bit going on then. What launched you into this field, or how did you get started in your career?
I started in 1974. Oh my gosh, that seems like so long ago. I was originally a nurse, and I was working in Vancouver General Hospital intensive care unit. And in those days, we worked 3 weeks of evenings, 3 weeks of nights, 3 weeks of days. And after 2 years of that, I was like crazy.
Yeah,
so
no
I
kidding.
Thought I needed a break for a while, and I had always thought that kids with autism were pretty interesting, and there was a job opening in a local agency that supported children with autism. I thought, well, I'll do that for a while and then I'll go back to nursing, but I never went back to nursing.
That's a really neat story. It's interesting how your path can change like that, and then you find yourself in a field for a long time and really get involved in it.
Yeah.
Can you explain a little bit of what CIRCA does or what happens at CIRCA?
Well, CIRCA is is more virtual than real.
Okay.
I mean, it's not like a place so much as it's a virtual online
right.
presence. We sponsor 6 to 8 colloquia on various research topics every year, and we post those on the CIRCA website in the media section so people can access them. We sponsor 1 or 2 conferences a year on various topics related to autism. For example, last summer we sponsored a 3-day summer institute on early reading strategies for kids with autism and other developmental disabilities. And as I said before, we try to create connections between the different researchers and community groups in the province who are all focused on supporting people with autism and their families.
Neat. Okay, so on our show, All Access Pass, we focus a lot on the accessibility of university and what that looks like and why it matters. So your expertise is research and working with students who have autism spectrum disorder. What do you think are some of the barriers that students with ASD who are interested in attending post-secondary face when they're trying to get into universities or colleges, or they're looking at what their options are?
So we're talking about not being here yet,
yes.
but getting here.
Exactly, yeah, okay. The transition from high school to post-secondary.
Right. Well, transitions in general are difficult for people with autism. From familiar to unfamiliar is very anxiety-provoking
right.
and dysregulating for many individuals. So, you know, just accessing a campus the size of UBC and figuring out how to get along, how to get around, where is stuff, what are the rules, what are the regulations, just getting registered for courses. I mean, I get it that that's a challenge for any new student, but it's even more of a challenge for people with autism spectrum disorder. And I think the transition from what is often a very semi-protected environment in high school
mm-hmm.
to a you're pretty much on your own environment on a university campus is very disconcerting for many of these individuals. They're used to maybe a special education assistant, or maybe they share one. They're used to a lot of family support. They're used to teachers who are understanding and are familiar with autism. And now here they are on a university campus or a college campus, and they may have none of those supports available or minimal supports of that type available. And it's a big change for all of these individuals.
Yeah, it sounds like it. Is there a role that high schools can play to make that transition easier?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think the biggest thing that's important at the high school level is to foster independence for students in grades, well, especially 10, 11, 12,
yeah.
Right? So, you know, students with autism who are coming to a university or college campus are academically able to manage that content.
Yeah.
But often the academic ability is way out of line with, if you will, practical ability.
Yes.
So these may be students who don't know how to ride the bus, don't know how to order their food in a restaurant because somebody's always been with them when they do that, aren't very good at budgeting, may have been dependent on other people for support around personal hygiene. I mean, there's all kinds of dependencies that can inadvertently be created in adolescents with autism, not thinking ahead to an independent life at university. And at the high school level, it's really important to think about that stuff early, early on and teach students in high school how to manage those kinds of very practical day-to-day things so that when they hit university, they're not lost.
So as a mentor in the program at UBC through Access and Diversity for students with ASD, in my training, they talked about the term hidden curriculum. Mm-hmm. I think that's maybe what you were touching on when you were listing those examples of things that can get going. Could you elaborate on what is meant by hidden curriculum or navigating that once students come to university?
Well, the hidden curriculum actually has two parts. One of the pieces is the practical part that I just talked about.
You know,
right? The sort of daily living skills part, getting
yeah.
around in the community part. The other part that people refer to when they talk about hidden curriculum has to do with the social aspects of being on a university or college campus. You know, there's this mythology that people with autism are antisocial. That's
yeah.
simply not true.
Right.
What it is true is that they're often not very good at being social. They want to make friends. They want to have social relationships, but they may not know very well how to do that. And we don't think at all of teaching high school students how to make friends. I mean, we assume that they know how to make friends.
Mm-hmm.
But for these kids, that's part of the hidden curriculum.
Yes.
So teaching them, how do you introduce yourself? How close do you stand? How loud do you talk? How do you have a conversation? If you only want to talk about astronomy and the other person wants to talk about other stuff, do you just talk about astronomy or do you talk about what the other person wants? All of those social aspects are really important to focus on, as not just in high school. I mean, ideally before that, but for sure at the high school level, so that students can engage in the vibrant and interesting social life that's available to them on campus.
Yeah, absolutely. In addition, from the idea of hidden curriculum, are there other barriers that these students face once they get to post-secondary that affect their success if they continue on? I know some statistics show that the students that do enter post-secondary sometimes end up dropping out because it doesn't work for them. What's another example of the barriers that these students face?
Well, there's a whole class of skills that people lump under the term executive function.
Right.
And executive function has to do with your ability to plan and organize and self-monitor, self-regulate, all of those aspects of a university or college life that are challenging, again, for any entering student, right?
Yeah.
But for people with autism, these are particularly difficult,
mm-hmm.
right? I mean, I know students, very capable, academically capable students, who, when they hit this campus at least, are completely overwhelmed by the registration process.
Yeah.
How do I register? How do I know if this prof is going to be able to accommodate my needs or not? Where are these buildings? How do I get from A to B? now I have three assignments all due on the same day. How do I plan my life so that I get these assignments in on time? Do I start the day before? Do I start a week before? I mean, all of that planning and organizing and coordinating, both geographically and in terms of the tasks that need to be done, can be really, really overwhelming for even otherwise very capable students with autism. And they're going to need support in those areas. Or at some point, they're likely to just throw up their hands and say, I can't do this anymore. I need to get out of here. Right. And some of it, a lot of it can be dealt with in advance, like saying to students with autism, don't take four or five courses a semester. Mm-hmm. That's going to be too much. Take one course your first semester. Get used to the whole thing. Take maybe two courses your next semester and then see what your tolerance. If it takes you 6 or 7 years to get through university, big whoopee. At least you'll get through and you'll have a positive experience rather than assuming that they can take a complete and heavy course load and it's just too overwhelming and they end up dropping out. So some of it can be – some of the problems can be averted in advance if there's an appropriate entry program. In some places, I know York University has this, for example, the summer before students with autism enter university, there are literally orientation sessions for them that – where they walk around the campus, they find out where stuff is, somebody helps them do their registration the first couple times. Mm-hmm. There are weekly sessions for the first couple months to make sure that they're getting appropriate support so they don't have to ask for it. They just show up and, right? So it's very structured and very sort of proactive. And I think those are all really important supports for these individuals.
Yeah, that's interesting that you brought that up. I know that doesn't exist at UBC, but UBC puts a lot of money and effort into running Jumpstart, which is a 3-week program for international students, which sounds like it looks quite similar to that.
Exactly.
And it could be so easy and probably really important for the university to implement a program like that for students with ASD. And it's a shame it hasn't happened so far, but it'd be cool if that could be implemented in the future.
Well, I think one of the challenges here in some ways is, I mean, if you're an international student, first of all, it's pretty obvious. You came here from someplace else.
Yeah.
You don't have to self-identify. It's in your record.
Yes.
And there's no, for want of a better word, shame involved in saying, I'm here from Japan, I'm here from Indonesia, I'm here from Sri Lanka, whatever.
Yeah.
For many students with autism, A, it's not in their record because they have to self-identify, and B, some people are very reluctant to self-identify because there's some stigma or they're afraid there will be some stigma attached to saying, I have autism, and I'm going to need these kinds of supports. So it's kind of different there. I agree with you mm-hmm. that a summer orientation program would be great. But first of all, you've got to find them.
Yes.
So that they come to the summer orientation program, which means that somehow there needs to be broad, broad outreach to all entering students to say, if this applies to you, let us know now in May or June or whatever that you're coming in September so that we can offer you these services over the summer months. So it's a little bit more complicated, but yeah. I absolutely agree with you that it would be an invaluable service.
Yeah, I think the same issue has come up with the program that does exist already within Access and Diversity. And for listeners that don't know what that is, it would be similar to maybe at other universities, they would call it Disability Services, which offers a varying amount of services to students with all different disabilities and needs, but they have a mentor program for students with ASD, and I know one of the things they've found is they've had fairly small enrollment in the program from the student base of students with ASD, and that is partially because they're only reaching the students who have already come to them and said, I have autism spectrum disorder. And identified themselves, maybe asked for other services, and then have found out about the mentoring program in that way. So it's a similar problem with lots of services, and it'll be interesting to see if we can overcome that and hopefully implement some more systems.
Well, and can I just interject?
Yeah, please do.
I think you're absolutely right about all of that. I think the other thing, though, is that a peer mentoring program is not the right support for everyone.
No, exactly.
I mean, I know students find their way to my office because if you Google UBC autism, you'll probably find me.
Yeah.
And I'll say to them, well, blah, 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 peer mentoring. And they'll go, oh, I heard about that. I talked to them about that. You know, that is not something that I'm in the least bit interested in. Here are the kinds of supports that I need.
Yeah.
But I, you know, right? Especially the sometimes older male students are,
yes,
like, you know, they see it as, I don't need a babysitter.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
You know, and that, of course, if you're a peer mentor, there's training that's involved that makes it clear that you're not to be in any sense a babysitter. But people don't know that and are, you know, can be insulted by the idea that they need someone to hold their hand, and especially a fellow student, like, right?
Absolutely.
So, I think it's a great program for some students, and it can be very successful, but there really need to be an array of services available, and not just on the UBC campus, but really on any campus.
Yeah, absolutely. Before we maybe explore some of those other services, could you just explain a little bit more about what the mentoring program looks like at UBC? Because I know there's lots of people who haven't heard about it. I've shared with a lot of my peers that I have this new job that I work for them, and they have absolutely no idea what it is or what it means. I think one of the misleading parts about the name too is a mentorship is sometimes mistaken for like the big sister, little sister,
right,
or big brother's organization. So I don't know if you could elaborate on what that looks like at UBC. That'd be nice.
Well, gosh, you're probably in a better position as a mentor to describe what it looks like than I am, but you know, we can do it together.
Sure, yeah. What
so
is the
basically,
ideal system?
Basically, students with autism are paired with a mentor who's a paid person through Access and Diversity. And the mentors meet regularly with their client or the student that they're paired with. Sometimes there's more than one student per mentor.
Yeah.
Get assistance around things like organizing and planning and registration and some of the mundane things that you have to be able to do when you're a university student, may get some academic support, may get advice or support around social issues. It's pretty broad, I think, in terms of what the mentors can do. But the idea is that the mentor isn't quite a friend, but also isn't a professional, is somewhere between the two, and is a peer who can provide advice and support.
Yeah.
Is that about right?
Yeah,
is that your
sounds
experience?
Exactly. Yeah. My experiences have been very varied. I have multiple mentees, and yeah, sometimes we'll just sit down and chat about what's socially going on in the person's life. Sometimes we'll talk about, like, well, you have 3 essays coming up. That sounds like a lot. Let's sit down and maybe just plot out what your schedule looks
right,
like for how you're going to study. Yeah. Other times, maybe just hearing what their concerns are and then pointing them in the right direction to other services on campus.
Right.
Because I am not a professional and I'm not equipped to provide things like counseling service.
Right.
Or I'm also not an academic tutor. So we're able to get some of my mentees set up with tutoring and counseling and other things like that.
Right.
So it's good to just be a sounding board, I think, and just checking in with your mentee. I know 2 weeks ago, you were also at the talk, as I was, given by Dr. Rashmi Nirmal about her research with students with high-functioning autism and their lived experiences at university and college. And after that talk, I had a few other students who were listening approach me because they heard me say that I was in the peer mentoring program. And they were a little bit concerned because they heard me say that I was a paid employee, and they felt a little bit uneasy that this mentorship program was being associated with like a paid position. And I think someone referred to it as like your student client. So it was interesting to kind of explain to them how that worked and what that looked like. And they were really asking me, what can I do just as someone's peer, not as an employee, not as a mentor, not as someone's assistant, what can I do to make that experience more enjoyable, more successful for the people that maybe I'm living in residence with or I'm in class with? They really wanted to make a difference, and they were, I think, kind of really concerned for the issues that were brought up, but didn't know how they could do that.
Right. Well, again, people with autism look like everybody else.
Yeah, they do.
And, you know, right? Like, okay, so here's this guy in my class or this woman, young woman in my class, and he or she seems to be having trouble. Is that because, I mean, how involved do I get?
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
Do I go up and say, hello, do you have autism? No,
probably not.
Right? You know, do I offer help because I'm a good person? Well, you could, autism or not, right?
Yeah.
If someone wants help, that they take it. If they don't want, they don't. I mean, it's awkward. It's like people don't walk around with a sign around their neck saying, hi, I have autism.
Yeah.
Ask me if I need help. Right?
Yeah.
So I think it's about, caring people, reaching out and offering assistance in various ways if it feels like the right thing to do, and not worrying about whether someone has a label or not at
exactly.
the end of the day.
Yeah.
I don't think knowing more about autism is a requirement, because, again, I don't know if this person who seems to be having difficulty has that label or not.
Yeah.
You seem to be having trouble. Is there anything I can do?
I mean,
that's basically as far as it can go.
Yeah.
I mean, of course, I'm always all over people learning more about autism. But I think, you know, there are lots of different people on this campus. There are people with mental health issues. There are people with physical impairments. There are people with for whom English is an alternative language, and they may need help. And it may have nothing to do with autism. It may have to do with a language barrier, right? So, I mean, I think in a caring, compassionate campus community,
mm-hmm.
people reach out and help each other.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. It's so true. We've done a couple shows already on mental health initiatives on campus that actually the points that were brought up are quite relatable to this. I know my experiences in other jobs and on campus with students who maybe have autism are just struggling with any other part of university life. Lots of students struggle, not just students with a disability or mm-hmm. students with mental health concerns. And some of these students have come to me and said, you know, I don't think it's my disability that matters. If someone is coming from a point of view that's kind and patient mm-hmm. and we're destigmatizing these issues and not putting a label, you know, just treat me as the individual who I am. Don't put me in a box.
Right.
But maybe if you feel like there's an awkward interaction, or you're not connecting, or you see that I might be struggling or that I'm different, practice some patience, or maybe, you know, go out of your way in residence if I seem shy or isolated to make an effort to come say hi
yeah.
and check in how I'm doing, or, you know, invite me to go to the movie with you. Just come from a place of compassion, like you said. And university is a really cool place because, at least I experienced, coming from a high school in the suburbs of Vancouver to a university with a much more diverse population, people are a lot more accepting of
yep.
differences. And
yep.
you end up being exposed and becoming friends with people who are vastly different from you, and you can connect over new things. And that can be a really neat environment for students who have a disability to come into as well, because they might feel like they can be more more accepted and less put in a box than they were in high school, where high school maybe labels of a disability are much more obvious.
Absolutely. I think for many university and college students with autism, that's one of the reasons they want to be on a campus, is because nobody knows.
Yeah.
Right. In high school, they were in the special ed program, or they had the assistant with them half the time, or everybody knew because they had grown up with those other kids that, you know, that they had these labels hanging around their necks,
yeah.
figuratively speaking. But on a college campus, it's like, I'm just who I am. And look, there's all these other people who are just who they are. And oh, look, that one has a mohawk, and that one has an earring, and,
yeah.
you know, right? Like, who cares,
yeah.
right? And it's very liberating for many students to just be in a place where everybody is whoever they are,
yeah.
right? And there's a level of acceptance and a level of diversity that they haven't experienced before. So that can be very cool for many individuals with autism.
Yeah, for sure. So in terms of going back to the, kind of the foundation of the show, which is accessibility, first touching on maybe I'll ask you what support systems already exist at UBC, maybe some that exist at other universities, and then maybe after that we can say, how can we make it more accessible? So starting with the what systems exist already, we'll start on a positive note.
Okay. So, well, we've already talked about Access and Diversity that offer a wide range of services and the peer mentoring program.
Yes.
So there's that. Career counseling services can be very helpful for these students. I mean, they are at a university and they're taking these courses, but like at some point you have to start thinking about what comes next. Am I taking the right courses? What am I good at? What am I not good at? And I know a number of students with autism who have had really positive experience with the career counseling services, at least on this campus.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there is certainly a wide range of social clubs on a university campus that you can join, and there's no admission criteria, and anybody can show up. And, you know, many people with autism have very specialized, very specific interests.
Yes.
And are very good at least one thing, if not a number of things that may be a bit off the beaten track. And the wonderful thing about a university or college campus, especially one the size of UBC, is that there's pretty much a club for everybody.
Yeah, there
is. You know,
is.
If you're into Star Wars, guess what? There's a Star Wars club. If you're into astrology, guess what? If you're into, you know, ballroom dancing, guess what, right? So that's great because it's kind of a ready-made social circle once you're in that kind of extracurricular environment. And that can be really – I mean, it's not a support just for people with autism, but it juxtaposes nicely with their needs.
Yeah.
Of course, there are counseling services, mental health services, tutoring services that are available through Access and Diversity. So on this campus, I would say that there's a pretty broad range of supports that are available, not just to students with autism, but in general.
Yeah. What's one system that you know of or that you can conceive in your mind, maybe having so much experiences in your career and over your lifetime, that you think UBC should implement that doesn't exist already? Or what's a way of making it more accessible?
Well, we talked about the summer.
Yes.
Summer entry program.
Yes.
One of the things that came up at Dr. Nirmal's talk, if you remember, was the idea of students with autism mentoring other students with autism,
right,
which is the only place that I know that that's happening now is at UVic, University of Victoria,
mm-hmm.
where there's a kind of peer support program, but it's people with autism being mentors and peers to other people with autism, right? Which is, I think, like way cool.
Yes,
right?
Totally.
Like totally cool.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd love to see that. I know that there have been sporadically some efforts on this campus initiated by students with autism to kind of have an ASPIE, if you will. Often people with autism refer to themselves as ASPIEs,
yes,
referring to Asperger syndrome, which used to be on the autism spectrum, an ASPIE club or an ASPIE advocacy group. And for some reason, that hasn't really gotten much traction. But I think it's always – I think it would be a really useful service, a really useful way of getting people connected.
Mm-hmm.
I know, again, on Vancouver Island, there's a group that gets together through, and they find each other through social media for kind of monthly social events, people with autism who get together, right?
Mm-hmm.
And again, the call will go out through social media. You know, we're all meeting at such and such a bar on such and such a night. If you want to come, get together, you know, and people just kind of show up.
Yeah.
And I think there's a sense among those individuals of relief to be with other people who are kind of like them,
mm-hmm.
and understand them from the inside out,
yeah,
in a way that you and I just never
will. No, we never,
right?
will.
So I think that kind of social networking among people with autism would be a thing that could catch on. at UBC?
Mm-hmm.
It hasn't. I don't know why it hasn't, but it could. Yeah. And with social media, I mean, geez, right? Everybody's on, I don't know, Facebook or Instagram or
Twitter the possibilities
or whatever.
Are kind
the
of
the possibilities
endless.
Are endless, right? Yeah. So I'd love to see some student put that together and make that happen.
That would be really neat
to
see.
It would be very cool.
So on our collective, we also have another member named Spencer, and he has sent me two questions for you. He wasn't able to be here today.
Okay.
So he is somebody who uses a wheelchair, so he's coming from that perspective, but I think his questions apply generally and relate to this interview as well. So one of the questions that he first asked was, what's the best way to explain to a professor your disability and learning style and individual needs in a way that sets you up for success? Before I get you to answer that question, I'll refer to something we talked about with Dr. Nirmal last week, because one of the quotes she had from an interview she did with a student with ASD was something along the lines of, from the student's perspective, once I was able to approach my professor and say, help, I'm struggling, I need some help, disclose that they had autism, the professor wasn't able to help them because they hadn't been trained and they weren't equipped or they just didn't know what they should do. And so I guess now going back to the question, what's the best way to explain to professors that you need some assistance? And then what can professors do in that situation?
That's a great question, I think. I think that it's true that just like in the general population, there's no reason to expect that most professors on a university campus will know anything about autism.
Yeah.
Except, you know, they saw Rain Man, right? Which is like a bit problematic.
Yeah, that is, doesn't
you know,
help
or
them.
Yeah, whatever. So I don't think it's about introducing yourself as someone with autism or someone with cerebral palsy or someone with a particular label. I think it's more about introducing yourself as someone who needs support in particular areas. Now, this requires a level of self-awareness.
Yes.
Right? I'm not very organized, or I have trouble planning, and I need you to help me plan how I'm going to get these assignments done so that they're in on time. Or sometimes I talk too much in class, and if I'm talking too much, I need you to tell me at the end of class that I am, because I'm not sure when I am and when I'm not, or whatever, right?
Yeah.
That requires a level of self-awareness to be able to say, here are the difficulties I have, and here are the kinds of supports that would be helpful. It may be that some individuals with autism or indeed any other disability might not have that level of self-awareness, so may need support from Access and Diversity to figure out what they need.
Yeah.
But I think that kind of direct ask rather than an indirect ask, I have such and such a disability, you need to help me, isn't going to be helpful, right?
No, you might find a professor then Googling ASD student at university.
Right.
That's not necessarily going to be helpful for them, and it may even set them in the wrong direction.
That's right.
Having been in the mentoring program and also just hearing your answer, I would add to that as well, from what I've heard from my mentees, doing something like that is very, very helpful, and also doing it early in the semester.
Absolutely.
So not coming as we're approaching the end of November saying,
oh my God, I'm screwed.
Yeah. I think all of us do that with some things, or we see a grade from our midterm that we wrote a month and a half ago, and oh my gosh, why did I get this grade? And the professor said, oh, you're coming to me a little late. I'm not sure what I can do. So starting that process at the beginning of the semester, as well as all the other services that we talked about.
Well, and my experience through, again, the students on campus who I'm familiar with around support from professors, if they approach it in that kind of here's what I need from you, has been very positive. I mean, I hear from students regularly that, you know, this prof didn't know anything about autism. He does now. It's the end of the semester. He's been dealing with me all semester.
Yeah.
But, you know, but I said to him, here are the kinds of things I struggle with. And that faculty are often very accommodating and willing to put in extra time for students, giving students, you know, flexible deadlines, making assignments flexible. I mean, I think that if people ask, they more often than not get what they need. But it's about doing the ask, as you say, early and as specifically as possible.
Yeah, I think I've heard the same things, too. I haven't heard a lot of experiences, but I've also heard really positive things. So that's a nice thing to hear happening. So this might touch on what we've already talked about, but another one of Spencer's questions was, do IEPs, for people that don't know what that is, it's sometimes referred to as an individual education plan, typically talked about in elementary and high school settings. So do IEPs, where marks are distributed differently to benefit the strengths of students, have a place in post-secondary for students with autism or other disabilities? And he gave me the example of someone who is very capable in a course, but maybe struggles in an exam setting a lot and perhaps would benefit from focusing more on assignments. So maybe they could replace one of the midterms they had to do with three assignments instead. Is this appropriate for university? Should it be? What's your opinion on that?
You know, I think it really depends upon the course and the level. I mean, if I'm a student in the medical school, I need to know how to do some stuff.
Yeah.
And substituting an alternative assignment might not be the best solution.
Not so much.
Then I don't have that, you know, the experience and the knowledge that I need. Whereas in other areas, of course, people can substitute out. And again, I think this is an individual faculty decision that can be made in conjunction with a student. But I think that it's often quite appropriate. You know, I have a lot of test anxiety. I might say to a prof, I have a lot of test anxiety. You know, you put me in a room and you make me take a test. Doesn't matter how long you give me to take it. My anxiety level is so high, I can't think straight.
Yeah.
Could I do an extra assignment or write a paper instead of that test, right? Because that way I'm much more in control of the situation and my anxiety is lower. You know, I think that's a perfectly reasonable request. Will everybody say yes? I think it will depend. But I think that asking for those kinds of accommodations is perfectly okay. I mean, it's a wonderful example of how to take good care of yourself, right?
Yeah.
And that's really what we're trying to help students do.
Absolutely. Right? Yeah. All right.
I mean, I think all of this is toward the goal of helping students, in this case, with autism, to have the most successful university experience that they can. You know, people use language, I think, often that's very depressed. You know, people talk about she suffers from autism.
Yeah.
You know, well, I mean, suffers, really?
Yeah.
You can have, I mean, having autism, being a person with autism, is not something that one needs to suffer from. Can you suffer from autism? Absolutely.
Yeah.
You can suffer a lot from having autism, right?
Mm-hmm.
I could suffer from being female. I could suffer from being Italian. I could suffer from all kinds of things.
Yeah.
But we don't want people suffering. We want people to just be who they are, bring their unique strengths and talents to bear, and have a successful experience. And I think that's got to be the goal for all students on a university campus. So no one is suffering from anything.
Yeah.
Right.
Absolutely.
And that applies to students with autism as well.
Yeah. It's a good point you brought up. It's one of my pet peeves is when people use that kind of language.
Oh, and I think it makes me crazy.
Yeah. No, me too. I think changing our language is the first step. And then also realizing that we're a part of someone not having to suffer. So
exactly.
As individual people, as an institution, as society, first not labeling it as suffering and not labeling someone within a box, treating them as an individual, and then being a part of making the environment accessible for them is really important. So finishing off our interview, I feel like we could talk about this for a long time, but finishing it off, you've been in this field for a long time, and I know that the field there's been a lot of changes over the last however many years for this in terms of research, just in terms of services offered, in terms of societal perceptions of what autism is. Could you end us off with what's one thing that you've been really, really pleased to see happen? What's a monumental, not necessarily event, but change, or what's progress that we've made?
That's a great question. So I've been doing this since 1974. Mm-hmm. Oh my God, that really dates me. never mind. You know, I think that people talk about an autism epidemic now because the most recent numbers are in the U.S. anyway are 1 in 68 individuals. A study just came out last week suggesting 1 in 45, but it's not the official number. But I don't think that's really what's going on at all. I don't think that there's an epidemic. I think that early on, the perception of what autism is was very, very narrow. So we thought that was it.
Mm-hmm.
And now the perception has broadened, so we understand that it truly is a spectrum disorder.
Yeah.
I think people with autism were always out there way more than we thought there were.
Mm-hmm.
But we never acknowledged this quirky person over here or that person over there who had special talent in a particular area or this person who is unique in a different kind of way as a person with autism. Now we do more and more, sometimes too much. I mean, if you go crazy with this, you know, every time you turn around, some other famous person has autism.
Yeah.
Right? So we don't want to go too far. But I think that the biggest, most positive change has been an acknowledgement of this range of, if you will, neurodiversity that we have always had in our society and an appreciation for that, an appreciation for the fact that we wouldn't have computers or social media or iPods or iPads or any of the things that we take for granted today if it wasn't for people with autism.
Yeah.
Right? Right? Like, and that's just so cool. Like, it's kind of, you know, it's kind of cool these days in some ways. You know, the nerd or the geek used to be a marginalized person, right? Like, oh, he's really nerdy or he's really, but now it's like cool to be nerdy and geeky, right?
Totally.
You know, the sci-fi people rule the world. Star Trekkers are like on top of the planet, right? And I think many of these individuals are in fact people with autism spectrum disorder, and I think they're coming into their own. I think they're getting the acknowledgement that they've been denied for so many years and are starting to come together themselves and be proud of the fact that they think differently and they have a different perspective on life. And, you know, that's good for all of us. So I just think it's a great time to have autism spectrum disorder now. I look forward to seeing what's going to happen in the next decade or two as, you know, people with autism are going to start ruling the world, I figure. You know, it's kind of cool. So I think we're in a really positive time, and that's really different from when I started, where this was like the worst thing you could tell a parent.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was all very doom and gloom. So, I think that's a cool thing.
That's a fantastic way to end off today. Thank you so much again for coming in, Dr. Miranda. I know that we're really grateful for all the work that you've contributed to the field, and it'll be really cool to see how having autism continues to unfold in society and what that means and how that reflects in university life as well.
Exactly.
So thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
Welcome back to All Access Pass. I hope you enjoyed that interview with Dr. Pat Miranda. Next week, you can tune in at 5 o'clock on Thursday, and Spencer and I will be talking about the event that was also called All Access Pass, promoting accessible and safe spaces, held at Venue Nightclub, and that's about accessibility and safety in the nightlife venues of Vancouver. So thanks so much again for listening today. Up next on the station is Peanut Butter and Jams, and we'll see you again on next Thursday.
Hi there. Are you tired of listening?